Well, good morning, everybody, and I must say it's fantastic to see so many people out on what should be a bright, sunny Perth morning, but I think it was raining when I came in. Sitting here in Perth and in Australia, sometimes it can feel like, what financial crisis is happening in the world. Well, in the United Kingdom, of course, it's not so sunny, and they're also blessed with tabloid newspapers to explain exactly what's going on. And apparently, I can report that sales of aphrodisiacs are up, and so are sales of maternity dresses. It seems that not everything goes downwards in a tough times. Elle Macpherson's underwear is doing very well. So too is a budget store called Poundland. Cake, wooden gravestones, musicals and feel-good films, they're all on the up. Even the Financial Times has got in on the act, and they found evidence that physiotherapists were in strong demand by investment bankers, stressed out investment bankers. Well, we've got a few of those here in Australia, and some of them are playing in the PPP market. Now, PPPs have, on the whole, in Australia, been a success story. They get a lot of bad press, and that includes ideological opposition and quite a lot of misinformation about how they work. The ideological argument, I think, has largely been won, and now both sides of most governments, political parties seem to support the model. I'd like to highlight some of the successes first before I then talk about recent events and how the current financial crisis, or in Rudd speak, the GFC, that's the global financial crisis, has impacted on the PPP world. I'll explain how I think the world has changed and what I think it means for the model. Then I'd like to do a little bit of speculation, if you'll indulge me, in what might emerge. I'm an optimist, and I think that out of adversity comes innovation. And I do think that the successes in PPPs mean that we will see adaptation. We will see hybrid models emerge under which government, I believe, will intervene and take on some of the risk to overcome the liquidity issues and the fear of debt which we're currently seeing around the world. Finally, I think that does lead me on to what I think governments may need to do, and there is a case, I believe, for some intervention. But first, the success stories. Just over a year ago, the Allen Consulting Group, in conjunction with the University of Melbourne, issued its report to Infrastructure Partnerships Australia. Now, that objectively looked at the performance of PPPs and traditional procurement in Australia. They looked at 21 PPP projects and 33 traditional projects, and the findings are quite stark if you read that report. PPPs clearly outperformed on cost efficiency. On a contracted value of $4.9 billion, the net cost overrun was $58 million, and I think for the statisticians out there, that's almost insignificant. For $4.5 billion of traditional procurement, the net cost overrun was $673 million. On time overruns, they found a very similar story. PPPs were found to be completed 3.4% ahead of time on average, and traditional projects 23.5% behind time. Statistically, quite significant results. The survey also found that, in contrast to commonly held perceptions about the relative transparency of PPPs, in fact, PPP projects were far more transparent than traditional projects, and that was measured by virtue of the fact that the available public data for the researchers to actually pull their study together. Now, these findings have recently been supported by a survey of infrastructure industry by law firm Blake Dawson, and that found that Australian projects worth more than $1 billion. Dollars, a quarter of them experienced cost blowouts of $200 million or more. And there's been similar surveys around the world. I can rattle them off. There's been the Mott MacDonald study in the UK. Bent Flodberg, who's an academic in Denmark, has found similar patterns. And indeed, the National Audit Office as well in the UK. Now, that's staffed by some pretty dour, conservative kind of audit types. So these people don't get too excited without reason. And they found in 2002 that 76% of PFI were delivered on time and 78% on budget, compared to government non-PFI relatively in 1999, where 30% were on time and 27% on budget. So, but that said, I don't agree that PPPs should be for every procurement. I'm a strong believer in having many different models in the armoury and using the right procurement for the right project. To be successful as a PPP, a project has to have the right characteristics that will unlock the value: scale, scope, innovation, real risk transfer, commercialisation, economies of scale. Now, not all projects have this, and it's generally accepted that only around 15% by value of government capital spend is likely to be suitable for PPPs. Where they have been used, I think that they have been demonstrated to be a success, but what about the current crisis? What about the credit crunch? What about Rudd's GFC? Well, the capital markets are certainly shut, and an increasing reliance in Australia has been placed on bank debt for infrastructure transactions. Now, the banks, unfortunately, are not prepared to underwrite large debt facilities. Financiers would typically underwrite up to $500 million each and hold about 25% of that underwrite. Financiers are now unlikely to be willing to underwrite more than their hold levels. So what we're seeing is much larger banking groups coming together for bids. Now, this is significant not just for the bid process, but also for managing a bank group during operations. You don't have that syndication process, so you don't have that control, and so the lowest common denominator, I'm afraid, tends to emerge. And what that has meant is margins have increased. As an example, the Airport Link construction margin, Airport Link up in Queensland, is 1.9%, and that compares to pre-credit crisis levels of about 1.5%. On the whole, we're seeing margins increased by 0.3 to 0.7% across both the economic and social infrastructure sectors. For those of you who've been following the news, the Bris Connections bank syndication process has been unsuccessful, has been postponed until early 2009. And overseas, I'm afraid the banks are in generally worse condition than the Australian banks, and this has resulted in reduction in market capacity for PPP debt, as these mega transactions are now considered by banks on a global basis. I'm afraid the so-called Macquarie model, leveraged debt model, is dead for now. And I knew this would happen. Here we go. Listed equity, as is illustrated by this slide, is not currently available as a source of funding. This is primarily due to the very poor trading performance of listed toll road assets on this slide, whereby Connect East, River City Motorway, Bris Connections, they're all trading significantly below their list price. And the cost of unlisted equity as well has increased for traffic risk on toll roads, particularly traffic risk being the issue. Unlisted equity returns for toll roads were around 12%. They've now gone up to 15% or even higher, and that's if you can get them to take the actual risk. Interestingly, on social infrastructure projects, these are the ones that are backed by a government payment, they've held the line at around 11%. And that probably reflects the lower risk transfer. Generally, the government credit risk is highly valued, and the overall tighter contractual arrangements for social infrastructure. And financial sponsors, of course, that are involved in underwriting toll roads, such as Babcock & Brown, well, they're currently experiencing significant difficulties, as you'll be aware from the news. Notwithstanding this, I do think the PPP models we will see continue. The outcomes have been too good, as I've illustrated, to see the model disappear just because we're experiencing a severe financial shock. And the question we at EY are turning our minds to is how will this model evolve? How will it change? How does it need to change? How does it need to adapt to retain the good features on the one hand and overcome what is quite extraordinary supply-side constraints from the financial markets? But in reality, I'd like to say that the model has never been about private finance. It's really about efficient procurement. And on the whole, in effect, the finance just holds the risk together. And I think the success of the model, with the financial markets changing, the most serious issue is the cost of debt. Isn't the cost of debt, but actually the availability, the so-called liquidity. And two factors have combined here. Firstly, the global reduction in bank lending capacity, and secondly, the Australian government's decision to guarantee bank deposits. Lending's dried up, and while recent government initiatives have been valuable, these actions don't address the core reduction in the market lending capacity and the banking community's perceptions of credit risk. And in Australia, we've had a relatively stable PPP model, but I think we now need to look to become more innovative about the model. And there are some precedents out there. The UK government, for example, has had the so-called credit guarantee finance model, where the government actually raises the debt and the private sector provides a financial guarantee on that debt. The UK and now Queensland have the so-called supported debt model, and that's a hybrid PPP where, again, debt during the operation period is provided by the public sector. And the European Investment Bank has the Loan Guarantee Instrument for Trans-European Network Projects, which effectively provides a credit risk guarantee for usage risk during the ramp-up period on transport projects. So I think these models need to be looked at in Australia, need to be looked at very seriously. And what needs to be done, and this brings me to the government bit, when capital markets are dysfunctional, I think there's a strong case for government intervention. And in this environment, I think there's a case for the federal government to directly support the lending by establishing a finance entity aimed at making additional lending capacity available, and secondly, providing funding options for non-banking financial institutions that have been caught up in the deposit freeze. And thirdly, we should be looking at these alternative models like the UK's Credit Guarantee Finance, Queensland Supported Debt, and the EIB's LGTT. Essentially, this is all about re-looking at the risk transfer as between government and private sector. And I hope that we don't have to resort to aphrodisiacs to perk up our market, or indeed physiotherapists. PPPs have, on the whole, been a success story in Australia and also overseas. There is a body of evidence out there that suggests that this is the case, and where they're used for the right project in the right environment, they do tend to deliver better cost and time outcomes than traditional forms of procurement. The world has changed. Credit is increasingly hard to come by. This means that the pricing of risk has moved on. Some would stay to more sustainable levels, and more importantly, the availability is scarce. The model, I think, is a good one. I think rather than throw it out because of supply-side issues, we should be looking at redesigning it to keep it going, keep it evolving. And we've been very good at that in Australia with our innovative financial models. And that means we need to look at different models and perhaps greater support from the debt side. And that brings me to the government intervention point. And I think there is a strong case for this. And I hope we'll see an institutional response alongside the predicted fiscal stimulus through infrastructure investment that is already on the cards. Thank you very much. I hope I haven't overrun too much on my 10 minutes. And I'll hand over to the next speaker. Thank you.